6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Chris and Clay's Canucks Commentary Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Light Force, joined virtually once again by Clay Emo at Canuck Clay. Welcome, Clay. How goes the battle?
Chris, this is amazing. This is a blast from the past. And I know before we pressed the record button, we were sharing some fond memories already. You brought me back for an episode. I think it was exactly a year ago.
About that.
But this is legit, man. We no Matt to try and worry about. It's just me and you this time.
Yeah, it was actually, you know, a year ago we had sort of our holiday special. It was like I called it a mixer, I think. We had just people dropping in, coming in and out. We streamed it. I had actually wanted to do something like that again this year. Mm-hmm. But coordinating last year was tough. And then when Anna, you know, found the opportunity to go home, she had not been back home for a few years, obviously, because of the pandemic. It made sense, obviously, she'd get there, and that just sort of left me. So I was like, okay, well, I feel bad not executing on something I sort of suggested I would do. But the next best thing is obviously getting you back in the fold. And then I'm sort of thinking back, well, you joined Matt and I like one summer where I think it was episode 200?
Actually, that's the one I was referring to. I completely forgot about the mixer. So yes, both things. Yes.
Yeah. So this is episode, I want to say 301.
So you bring me in every 100 episodes, it sounds like.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the trend. Actually, you came back. So there was between 200 and 301. So
yeah,
twice every 100 episodes, I guess, is the way this goes.
Awesome. Anytime, man, you let me know.
Yeah. But no, it's good to have you back. And it was a throwback. I mean, I bet you we have listeners today that have just presumed C4 was something to do with like an explosive. Oh, that's an explosive podcast. It kind of was when you and I got together.
Now, what were we joking about yesterday on Twitter? What was the new C that we had?
Chris and Clay's Costco commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Because we both went to Costco on Sunday.
You as a good husband and me as a wannabe good husband, we support our wives, and not just support, we go with them to Costco on the weekends when we think it's going to be less busy on Sunday morning, trying to avoid getting hit in the parking lot, getting hit in the aisles. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. Yep.
Well, you presume my wife went with me. No, she was still in bed. Oh, I let her sleep in and I head out to Costco. So it was just me. I guess went to the Richmond one. I went out to Langley.
Langley one's nice. Richmond one's, I think I've heard it's the busiest one in North America.
It could be. I think Richmond's problem is the parking lot so small now. Like it's not big enough to support the amount of traffic. Whereas Langley, it's a good size Costco, but it's also a bigger parking lot. And I've actually found more and more frequently, I spend more time trying to find a spot at the Langley Costco. Because I think there's just so many people. And there's one in Surrey, too, and all that. But, you know, we'll save that for a future episode of Chris and Clay's Costco commentary.
Yeah. We did definitely have some explosive episodes. And I'm not talking about what we ate for dinner. It was, both of us getting our feet wet in this, in the Smelosphere, as we used to call it. And it was a lot of fun.
Called that. I don't let that one go. But we'll reminisce a little bit later in the episode. This show, though, is 1 week removed from some Canucks changes that I think caught, not that it caught me off guard, but like if I go back two episodes ago, I had said, oh no, if the Canucks don't make changes coming home from that road trip, it'll happen in 2022. And changes didn't occur, but then they did. So we'll get into all that. We'll get your thoughts. Obviously, the Canucks are playing hockey and hockey well. And I don't know, you've been up to a whole lot since we last spoke. So why don't we just start rewinding things a bit? A week and 1 day ago, Anna and I got together and we recorded a show. And actually, Clay, just to sort of let you in behind the scenes here, Anna was going to that hockey game last Monday. And as a result, we record normally Mondays. It's sort of been the thing with C4 forever.
Yeah.
And she and I decided the week previous, why don't we record Sunday night? That way we're not recording like just before she goes to the hockey game or recording really late after the game. And we just said, hey, let's record Sunday.
Yeah. Nothing's going to happen on Sunday.
No, like what would, especially considering we had that week, that show before said, if anything happens, it's going to happen like Friday afternoon. Bad news happens Friday afternoon. And so word comes down the pipe that there is changes happening in Vancouver. Like Elliot Friedman's tweet that it is done. It's like, what? At first it was obviously Travis Green who'd been reported to be no longer with the team. And that was like, what the heck? Why is Jim Benning getting another coach? Like, this makes no sense. And then obviously Jim Benning was without a role within the organization, but it was just a crazy night. I think all 138 Canucks podcasts, all recorded emergency shows, except for C4, who had planned to record our episode Sunday all along and suddenly had a whole lot to talk about. But, you know, going back to that weekend, how was it for you? Like, did you expect there to be changes?
You know, yes and no. I actually thought the changes, Chris, would happen, and I'm not alone in thinking this, back in mid-November when they were on that horrible road trip where they got smoked in Colorado.
They're giving up 7 a night.
Yeah. Then they played good in Vegas for half the game. They got smoked, and then they lost, I think, in Anaheim. And then I think a lot of people thought that the changes were going to happen then. So for them to take another 3 weeks, a bit surprising, but ultimately in the big picture, no, not a surprise at all. I do remember I was getting ready to go to church as I do on Sunday night. I think I lied down for like a half an hour nap. And then I woke up. It was my son, Sean, that came in and said, Dad, did you see this tweet from Friedman? And sure enough, I got changed, did my little emergency episode of my YouTube vlog, and then made my way to church and then live streamed that night. And it so happened to be my biggest live stream ever because of the excitement, the shock, the anticipation of change in this market.
Yeah. It was, you know, I think to your point, not as surprising. Like, I think change was going to happen. Like that road trip, I think everyone who felt change was going to happen felt it was going to happen then. And when it didn't, it's like, oh. And, you know, while it's possible that teams make changes while they're on the road, I mean, we've seen it here in Vancouver. Like Pat Quinn was let go when the team was in Washington to go way, way back. And so yeah, Vancouver has done done that type of thing without people being back in Vancouver. It's just not something that has happened frequently. And so, I sort of presume they come home. They're not going to play a game on the weekend and then make the decision, you know, Sunday.
Yep.
Now we've since learned things were already sort of in the works, like wheels were in motion, and that makes better sense that it wasn't like a one game decision. Though unfortunately, that one game was a game. You had a chant, that one could not be ignored on the broadcast, and two, a jersey found its way on the ice.
Yeah.
So it's not to suggest it's not a good look that the, you know, ownership group, Francesco Aquilini's family decided to obviously make those changes on Sunday. It is, however, I feel weird that they did it like Sunday night.
Yeah.
Like that was the part, like if you were going to make changes, would they not have occurred like first thing Sunday? Maybe they did. And then it was just word trickled out, or would you wait until the Monday? And you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I think you're right, Chris. I think actually they wanted to wait till Monday morning. I could see a press release, right, at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. And then they'll be ready to go with media at 11, whatever it was. But I think because, and we know the world we live, we're part of it, where it's guys trying to break stories and people trying to react to stories. When Friedman got it out, and then you have the local ones like Satchar and Irv Gafar and confirming it just snowballs. You know this. And then I think they were already behind, but they still want to try and get ahead of it, as ahead of it as they could. And then they couldn't simply wait till, they try that again. They simply couldn't wait till Monday morning. They had to go Sunday night. What was ultimately the time? Like maybe 9 or 9:30?
10:30 at night was when the Canucks release went out.
Wow. Okay. So right, they couldn't wait another 12 hours. Yeah.
Eastern media was asleep. So really, is there any other media out there? I mean,
wow. Well, and then, you know, we'll probably get into this, but your first reaction when you heard about Green and Benning, from a standpoint of, were you surprised it was both?
No. Yeah. But then Okay, so for me, I've never been a Jim Benning guy. Like, if I were to throw back to you and I recording our first podcast episode, it was when the Vancouver Canucks had essentially let Alain Vigneault go and they hired John Tortorella. Because we actually ended the episode of you and Maria doing the under John Tortorella.
Wow. So this is back in 2013.
Yeah, way, way back, right? And then that one season was crazy. And then obviously Mike Gillis was out. Lyndon was in his, I think he was president of hockey ops, if I recall.
Yep.
Tortorella, weren't sure if he was going to be kept. Obviously he wasn't. And changes all occurred. So we're almost going back to that point, maybe a year removed, where, hey, you and I are getting back together recording a podcast talking about changes. But to the fact that Benning was out of the picture, that did not shock me. I felt that he had had long enough tenure as a GM. I'm pretty confident you've seen the numbers. They're not in his favor for performance. Mm-hmm. He was one of the longest tenured executives for the Vancouver Canucks organization. And he had by far one of the lowest, you know, performances over the tenure. Now, even if you discount the sort of two and a half seasons that are impacted by the pandemic, the team had not performed. And you had a executive like Mike Gillis, whose team missed the playoffs essentially, well, twice if you count the year at the end. But his teams made playoffs, were a win away from a cup. And he's not given the same leash. So it was just really weird. I felt Jim was done. I was surprised by Green in so much that why rush things? Like, if you're going to bring in a new executive team, you let them do what they need to do and make those decisions. You don't sort of tie a coach to a new GM, a new president of hockey operations, what it might be. Now, as we've learned today, Jim Rutherford, who we'll talk about in a moment, signed off on Bruce.
Yeah.
Bruce Boudreau, the new coach. And it's also come out that Bruce is on a two-year contract where the second year is an option.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very shrewd negotiation tool, because that allows you the out if that new GM comes in and says, I'm not really on the same page.
I think though, after four games, they should sign him now, but that's just my opinion. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get, this is the weird thing with Rewind. We'll get into the week that was, because my goodness, it's been a week.
Well, one point of clarification, Chris, as I was thinking about our history of C4, you and me, and then I just remembered the Tortorella year, it was still Gillis, because when Lyndon came in, it was actually the same summer that Willie D and Benning, they all came in.
Oh, yeah, no. Summer. Yeah, because when Lyndon had took over, Gillis hired Torts.
Yes.
Gillis is gone.
Yes.
Solidarity to Beard out the door.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Lyndon
right.
Lyndon eventually comes over, has a conversation with Torts. Torts is out.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, Benning gets hired. Desjardins gets hired. There off you go. The races we go.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
So, Francesco, during his presser on Monday with the interim GM, Stan Smeal, says we're going to, you know, leave no stone unturned. Long, exhaustive search for our next GM or president of hockey operations. If we bring in one person, I don't think that's necessarily the right way. Depends on who they are. Might have two, but they need to work together. And they had this like collaborative group. You had Stan Smeal, Chris Gear, Jonathan Wall, Ryan Johnson, and
Sedins.
The Sedins. Yes.
Yeah. Five. Sorry. The big five.
And on that Monday, you know, it's like, okay, Stan, like I even referred to this on the Sunday show, like, does Stan have a job for life? But then I'm hearing at the presser, and he didn't sound like he was really on board with where the executive group had sort of taken the team. And then in the subsequent interview that he had Monday night on Sportsnet during the broadcast, I think it became very apparent that Stan was maybe keeping his mouth shut until such time as he wasn't keeping it shut no more. And the collective Canucks Twitter was like, wow, this Stan guy kind of is showing his passion here. Maybe he should be our GM.
Yeah.
And he was for two games, best GM ever. Canucks win two. Because what's happened, Jim Rutherford gets announced as the new president of hockey operations, because that long and exhaustive search took, what, 3 days?
Yeah.
I know it didn't. But it's just like, before we talk about the Rutherford signing, why would you go and say long and exhaustive in your prepared speech if it, like, you just simply say, we are looking for the right person.
Yeah.
It's like, you can position in any which way you want, but when it comes to communication, the Canucks have not done it well in maybe the past couple seasons.
You make a really good point, Chris, because it's one thing. It's almost like by compensating by not wanting to say that it's going to be quick, they went too far the other way by saying it's going to be long and exhaustive. You're exactly right. They could have simply said, they don't have to say we're going to take our time. We are going to hire, when we find the right person, we will hire them. And that could intimate months. It could be days. But when we find the right person, exactly. But they found the right person. They just kind of mixed it up with the messaging of it's going to be long and exhaustive. Then you have Stan Smeal, who actually impressed me with his forthcomingness and his passion. And but I've never seen him, Chris, as a like the full GM type of guy. Ooh. And maybe I'm still scarred from the way he announced Vasilia Putslovin's. Yeah, well, we got to give him a break, I guess. But you can't deny his loyalty, his passion for this team. So I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know what the true story was behind the scenes, what he was told, what he believed to be true. But obviously, it became very apparent within 4 days, even though, you're right, he went 2-0, that he wasn't in the plans long term.
Well, and I actually referred to this in C4 Discord, but I started to wonder when the word that came out that Jim Rutherford was essentially taking over this president of hockey operations role, is Stan more an advisor to ownership, right? Like we occasionally see this sort of role, like you'll see the advisor to the GM or special advisor to the such and such. And I'm actually not entirely clear what Stan's role within the Canucks operation happens to be.
Yeah.
But if he had that advisor role, his voice may carry some additional weight.
Sure. Wasn't he listed, Chris, as wasn't with Jim Benning? Didn't he have 3 AGMs? I thought it was
he had
Weisbrod, Gear, and Smeal, right?
As far as I know, yes. But like the Smeal one, like I don't know for certainty, but I have this understanding that Smeal was maybe not part of the inner circle or Jim's inner circle.
Yeah. That would make sense.
That may have been by choice or design or who knows what. So that's why I kind of wonder, was he sort of there because Jim was told this is a guy that you need, but not necessarily Jim's guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right on there. I think it's almost in contrast to what the Sedins might do. With the Sedins, I could see, not now, but I could see them taking really, really high and roles once they completely learn about the business and the inner workings of the team. Those are guys, and who knows, maybe they don't want it, but I guess my point is with Smeal, loved him as a player, as an ambassador, community guy, all those things. But even when he was named interim GM, Chris, I did not think he would ever get a look at as the actual.
Yeah, no, the only reason I even bring it up was that essentially one, interview during the broadcast where he showed like the passion on the sleeve. But I think I also look at how Stan was communicating, and even that press conference, I'll give it to Francesco, who was present. I feel that as an owner, he shouldn't be here all the time, but he needs to be here more of the time to sort of be available to media.
Yeah.
But Stan was a breath of fresh air. And I have given, Jim some slack here. Communicating, not his forte. I'm actually wondering what his forte might be. I'm sure he has one or more than that, but communicating wasn't it.
Yeah.
Right. Like Mike Gillis, he was an articulate communicator, but his ability to communicate in a fashion that engaged and came across as genuine was lacking. Jim just didn't have the communication skills. So then you get Stan, who's just, I'm going to tell you how it is. It's like that blue collar employee in the garage that's going to tell you it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, there's no reading between the lines here because you drew them for me.
Yes. Quick aside, hot take. Francesco Accolini is not as bad in front of the media as people made him out to be. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I think I get the feeling that he's maybe not as quick on his feet when it comes to choosing his words.
Mm-hmm.
But when he is able to sort of, not freestyle, but be a little more relaxed and engaging, he's really good. He's a good communicator in that sense.
Sure.
But when he gets we'll talk about Jim's presser today, but he got a question that he did not want to answer. Yeah. And you could tell he was probably prepped with it.
And as soon as it goes off the map,
it's like, what's the checklist here? Like, it's like, I'm no longer,
Yeah, it's funny.
Guys at the bar.
I know we'll get to, but when they asked the question, I'm pretty sure I know where you're going with this. It's almost like at first he didn't even hear it. He didn't know it was getting me. He was distracted. And then you're right. You can almost see him verbally going. I mean, you can see him mentally going through the checklist in his mind. Okay, but we'll save that. Yeah.
And I think that's where he goes off the rails. But that's why, sure. Like, I feel like I don't necessarily want him to be on in front of the media day in and day out. Like, he already gets punished for being a hands-on owner, whether or not he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he is right. When he talked about sort of the way things should work, owners own, managers manage, coaches coach, players play. And that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I will maybe question whether or not as an owner, he may not maybe infer or articulate ideas just openly. But I mean, I feel he is still good at communicating on, let's say, three quarters of what needs to be talked about.
Yep, I'm with you there. And I think people are always questioning how much does he meddle? How much does he actually get involved? He's saying the right thing, saying no, exactly what you said. Owners, managers, coach, players play. But even, I'm not sure you read the LeBron article in The Athletic where they interviewed him as well. And they're still seeing, meddling is too strong of a word, but let's just say I think he likes to be involved. And maybe maybe that's okay because you want a passionate owner. I just don't.
If I was an owner,
yep.
I would be present. I would share openly share how I'm feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I think I would, and I don't fault him for that.
Yeah.
I don't fault him and the family. He takes a lot of flack being the face of ownership, obviously being the governor, but hey, if you own a team, have at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
is what it is. Jim Rutherford though, he gets hired. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Well, not so much were you surprised by the hiring, but do you feel Jim Rutherford is the guy the Vancouver Canucks need?
I think when you look at his track record, Chris, two Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh, one in Carolina, you can't argue with that. Admittedly, those were as a GM and not as a president of hockey ops. But I agree with what a lot of people have been saying. If you pair him with the right guy, and when I say right guy, it's basically anyone who's younger than him, which is almost everyone, including you and me. I think it's okay. I think if you hire someone who's more forward-thinking, maybe analytic, although Jim actually, I'm not saying old guys can't appreciate analytics. I think he does. But I think if you pair him with the right guy, he's fine. I liked how assertive he seems. I like how direct he is within his communication. But he said all the right things today for me. He said he wasn't looking to make a trade just for the sake of making a trade. He doesn't want to trade away first rounders. He loves Demko. Demko was the one guy he mentioned on his own, right? And then he was prompted for PD and Hughes. But I did like how he's basically said he's going to build his hockey operations team first before he starts tinkering what's happening on the ice. So honestly, man, for a first time in front of the media, I liked everything that he said, but he's direct in his communication. And I shouldn't really make fun of Benning's public speaking skills or lack thereof. He's a passionate guy, loyal guy, but we use this term a lot, but it was a breath of fresh air today.
It was. And I think you're right, Jim. It just wasn't like they were asking Jim to do something he just did not have the skill set for. That's not his fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Jim Benning would tell you that I'm a clear and concise communicator, right? But yet it was unfortunately part of the role. And once Trevor Linden was no longer in the picture, they never went and found someone that could. And that's why I think we saw Travis Green come out often in situations where it was probably better suited to a GM or an AGM. Like, that's the weird thing.
Yeah.
They could have, like, I mean, it wouldn't have been good to throw Daniel or Henrik out there, let's be honest. but like, you know what I mean? Like, having someone who could at least be the communicator. It's look at the NHL. I mean, yeah, Gary Bettman is the face and the voice, but there's a reason why, you know, Daly comes, you know, Bill Daly gets trotted out once in a while too, right? You need that sort of, that, you know, backup, and the Canucks, they lacked that. As far as Jim's hiring, I would have preferred the long and exhaustive, but I understand this had been something that had been going on for a few weeks now prior to the decision actually being made. I don't necessarily have anything against the Rutherford hiring.
Yeah.
So long as, to your point, they bring in a complementary piece as GM, someone who can sort of be the yin to the yang of what he provides. I am wanting the Vancouver Canucks to be a forward-thinking franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love for them, and we've talked about this on the show with Anna, where, like, the Seattle Kraken, not so much in the hockey operations side as much as maybe other teams, or they could, but they are looking at just being not so much different for the sake of being different, but providing an opportunity to people who would have otherwise may not have been able to get that shot. I want the Canucks to give that, you know, opportunity to someone.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, and that's where that GM comes into play. But if they don't do that, then I would like for whomever comes in to be maybe that caretaker for a couple of seasons to then sort of help that transition. If there's a mentoring opportunity that exists or something, like, I just want this to be sort of that reset so the Canucks can be different. And I look back to the Gillis era, and while he had his faults, the Canucks were doing different things, and look at the success that they were able to drive from it. And the fact that what they did at the time, other teams started to do. Unfortunately, the Canucks looked at what beat them and decided they wanted to be more like that. And it didn't go as well, right? So
yeah, they weren't built for that. That's for sure. Yeah. No, you make a really good point. Isn't it crazy how we come out of here? By the time this season ends, we'll have a new head coach, a new general manager, and a new president of hockey operations. Talk about a clean sweep. I do think the thing I find fascinating too, Chris, is you talked about earlier in the episode that Boudreau's got this year plus an option year. So at the max, 2 years. Rutherford is already 72. I can't see him. Well, who knows? Do we even know how long? It's 3 years, right? Rutherford's 3 years.
I think he's on a 3-year deal.
Okay. So do you hire a GM for only 2 or 3 years, or do you give a 4, 5, 6 year contract to a GM and he basically outlasts the president and the coach, which is fine. Ultimately, the GM will speak into a lot of things as well. So that's, I think, another interesting thing when you're talking about, are you going to go after an assistant GM right now, try and get permission mm-hmm. to talk to other teams and look at a longer term versus short term, or do you line it up where it's only 3 years, the same term as Rutherford? So then again, you have a chance for another clean sweep 3 years from now.
Yeah.
So many factors, so many interesting nuances for sure.
Yeah. If there's something I liked from the Rutherford interview, though, is he said that, well, I'm not going to be rushed into this.
Like, yeah.
This season, we're going to evaluate it. Yeah, we'll have a better idea come the end of January what things will be like. Mm-hmm. But I think if we consider this team on paper should have been better to where they are today.
Yep.
This past week, notwithstanding. And, you know, things didn't work out. Now, yes, we're seeing sort of string of games really turn out well, but I like that their approach is like, okay, this could be a flash in the pan. Let's be smart. Let's not put ourselves into a problem, because what's not to say Rutherford comes in and says, yeah, this is a good team. Like, everything that Benning had told us, made those deals, you know, trade those picks and, you know, anchor the team. Like, you know, I think they're actually doing smart things, and mm-hmm. I'm okay with that as a fan. Like, I think I would like them to be successful, but if they have to go and hit a button to reset and do it right, I am going to still be around for that.
Good. And I think the key for Rutherford is he's got to be able to assess that the team probably isn't as bad as they showed for the first 20 games, but maybe it's not as good as the team that's rattled off 6 of the last 7, albeit against some weaker teams. So he's got such a vital job, Chris, in that he's got to come in and be able to see exactly who this team is. And that's when he's going to start to put a stamp on this team. And we know his trade history with Pittsburgh. We know
one player a month. One trade a month, sorry.
That's so crazy. So crazy. And I think a lot of fans here would be for it, but it's no surprise that players they know that many of them may be either on their way out or at least being evaluated. So it's no surprise. Yes, Boudreau's been great. New system, new style of play. But I think the players themselves have pulled up their collective socks and they know that they're being watched and evaluated too.
Yeah. Before we get into the week that was, let's talk about the other two changes that happened. So shortly after being brought into the advisory committee, Chris Geer and Jonathan Wall were both shown the door by the team. And a couple things that I found interesting. One, the quote came from Stan Smeal, not Francesco, which, okay, that is interim GM. Makes sense that the guy in charge makes that decision. But then the question is, like, would you not have your president involved to make those decisions, or maybe he was, and he identified those two as people he didn't want. You had this back and forth and sort of the Canucks social media or Smelosphere, as we call it, where, oh, it's clean slate. They were Jim's guys. And you have others who are like, no, man, they were Canucks lifers. Hmm. And in the interview today, Jim was asked this, and his answer was, that had nothing to do with me. You'll have to ask Francesco.
It was very direct.
Yeah. So one, it showed that Jim ain't taking the fall necessarily.
Yeah.
But two, I genuinely wonder what it was that either Stan or whomever saw within Chris Gear and Jonathan Wall as being a problem that needed to be dealt with now. Like, Chris Gear was arguably the capologist, and the Canucks are without one. That question came up, and it's been inferred that the league is providing a little, you know, help on this.
Good old central registry.
Right? Like, okay. Analytics obviously being a focus. Jonathan Wall was in charge of that department and him being out. So that question came up to Jim, and Jim's like, I'm not against it. I just, I don't have a problem when someone says I'm not against it, but I feel like by saying I'm not against it, you're actually trying to say that you're not for it.
Yes. Yes. Otherwise you'd say you're for it. Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's okay. Like, to say, hey, I'm totally into analytics. I feel they're a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But when you come out and say, I'm not against this, but okay, cool. It's just like, hey, Clay, you're dressed really well today, but those shoes, let me tell you, poor decision.
Yeah. Or even better yet, you're not dressed poorly.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's the thing with Wall and Gear. They both superseded or whatever, preceded Ben and getting here. It wasn't one of them 20 years and one of them 12 years or something? Or is that not 20 years?
Gear had been around forever. Like, he was talking about Victor DeBonis and his farewell. That was it. Like, when he posted the farewell sort of tweet, and people are like, oh my God, he's not thanking Stan. He comes out and thanks Stan, but it's interesting. He does not say anything about Jim or Weisbrod.
Yeah.
Actually, what did Weisbrod do? Do you know?
No, but if you find out, let me know, man. We can do another episode about that. So the way I love how you brought it up, Jim Rutherford, he flat out didn't BS. He just simply, he literally pointed and passed the buck or passed the imaginary buck to Aquilini. And Aquilini, I think he tried to say that it was his decision and that he wanted a fresh start, or, and I guess he still equates Gear and Wall with the quote old regime. And there's very few of the old regime that are remaining. So yeah, you're right. You heard that Chris Gear had to do with a lot of the contracts, and we like so many of the contracts that we've heard of in the past 3 years between Hughes, Pettersson, Demko, Garland, even, you know, the Horvat one, maybe Besser was the one funky one, but that they're gonna have to face at the end of the season. So yeah, Gear did a good job. And as analytics have become more prevalent, certainly Jonathan Wall was gaining some prominence as well. So very surprising, very surprising. The this whole week, timing wise, I'm glad you, it's been nuts. And if it could actually make for a good documentary of some sort, if someone actually tried to piece it out.
Yeah. Maybe watch it on Amazon Prime.
Why don't you do that? You're not doing anything else between four podcasts.
Exactly. I'll just do the behind the scenes, where I'm not actually behind the scenes.
Yeah. Love it.
So here we have all these changes happening. But one thing that has been also occurring is the Vancouver Canucks have been playing games.
Yeah.
And we now have the most winningest coach in their first four games ever. Like, no coach for Vancouver has ever won their first four games from taking over the team. Bruce Boudreau has somehow taken a team that Travis Green had in front of him and manufactured a level of compete that Travis was struggling to find. You could argue the team was not buying the message that Travis was saying. You could argue the team understood that there was going to be changes and therefore they were simply mailing it in, which I feel as professionals, I don't think they necessarily do. Like, there's this level of compete that will always exist. But whatever it is that's happened, Bruce Boudreau has somehow allowed this same group of players to do things that are reminiscent to sort of that very successful area. They're not, I'm not trying to say they're the same team. This team has glaring holes. Like, the blue line is not set up in a way that allows this team to be defensively sound, but that's not what they're going for. They're going for the, we're going to score more goals than you do, and we're going to get wins somehow. And right. that's been working because Demko's been standing on his head, mm-hmm. and the Vancouver Canucks are finding ways to get themselves a point. And then I don't know what it is about the Canucks and shootouts this season, but gosh darn it.
Yeah.
They're good.
They are.
They just didn't get, they don't get an opportunity to get there all that often.
I think I agree with you that the Canucks weren't mailing it in, but you could also say maybe Travis Green had lost the room. As much as I like Green, I think it was obvious because Boudreau is a great coach. Yes, let's give him props. 10 out of his 11 full seasons, his team has made the playoffs. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So he's instilled an energy, a confidence, a creativity to their game, and assertiveness, all those things. But ultimately, it's still those 20 guys that have to execute. So it's pretty crazy how the change would give him an initial kick in the pants kind of thing. But to sustain that over four games and to beat a very strong team in Carolina, this team's for real, for sure. Now, how real? They kind of dug themselves a big hole. So they're, even after rattling off four straight, they're still three games below, and you got to finish 12 games above to make the playoffs. So they have a lot, of ground to make up, but it's exciting hockey, man. It's exciting.
Well, and that is the thing that I have found most engaging is that I am at this point where I kind of want to watch the game, whereas before I watched the game, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Like it was background noise and I was doing something else. Now I'm more like, hey, what's going to happen? You know, it's just the reason I sort of ask you, like, what is it that Bruce is doing different than Travis Green was? And there could be a lot, there could be not that much.
Yeah.
It was like this, was it the second game when Lamico finally got a goal?
Yep. Yep.
And you know, Bruce is like, sir, who's the guy that, scored his first in a while here, and someone's like, Lamico. Yeah, Lammy. The coach doesn't yet know his players' names because, in fairness, how could he?
Yeah.
Right? Especially a journeyman player or a young player he hasn't seen a whole lot of. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that he's like, hey, Lamico, here's the three things you need to do, and you'll find success, and boom, he scores. It's just something about the energy is different.
Yeah, and maybe it's because his best players, or the ones that are supposed to be his best players, like Petey and Besser, the two guys that everyone talks about, really are going to benefit from Boudreau. Maybe because they are playing more confidence, it has that trickle down effect. So maybe a Chiasson or a Lamico or a Mott or a Pearson mm-hmm. or a Dowling, maybe they have a bit more pep in their step too, because they see guys like Miller, Pettersson, Horvat, Hughes, Besser performing. So obviously not a bad thing at all. And when you have guys like Myers and Pullman playing out of their mind last night, you know something's going on.
Yeah. Well, that's the blue line that I had taken shots at has started. I mean, there are some holes and you know, gaps that are going to need to be dealt with. But you're right. We're now starting to see two defensemen, one who everyone suggests should be a forward, and another one who people question whether or not they're on the right spot in the ice. They're quitting themselves well enough that it's allowing the team to perform. The other thing that I wanted to touch on just before we sort of segue into Heffel Heffountain, mm-hmm. you being a music guy, probably appreciate that on Monday night when the Vancouver Canucks were playing in Bruce's first game, the Larscheiders happened to be in the house.
Uh-huh.
And the Larscheiders, as a group, decided, let's go. And, you know, they try to influence sort of the atmosphere. And I don't know. I don't know if it was talked about in advance, because, like, as far as supporters groups go within the context of sport, they emulate a lot of what we see here, sort of with like soccer, but not to the same extent. But they did. Bruce, there it is. And now that has become a thing where every game, Bruce, there it is, which is a much better chant to hear on the broadcast than fire banning, right? A little more positive.
Yeah.
After the first game, Bruce was asked about it. He's like, what were they saying? And he's like, oh, if I lose one, Bruce, there he goes.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, I like the fact that he's just like, man, I'm having a good time. I could give, you know, two hecks about whether or not, you know, like, it's just, he's good at communicating. But then two, we get into game four. I really wish they'd stop with that darn chant. Which to me is like motivating Canucks fans to do it more. Like, right. I don't know if he's quite figured out the market yet.
Yeah.
That's not how you go about asking someone to stop here.
You know what's funny, Chris? Yeah. So as a music guy, I do appreciate, and I kind of joke around about, you know, who makes up, who changes lyrics to popular songs and thinks it's a cool idea, and says the guy who's done 36 parody songs. But I will ask you, Chris, because I put this on my Twitter feed earlier today. Bruce Boudreaux, is he what, 66 years old, right? Or is he something? So do He's you older. Think he actually knows either the 95 South original Woot, There It Is, or Tag Team's Woomp, There It Is? Do you think A, your choices are A, Boudreaux actually knows the song and that's why it annoys him, or B, he actually has no clue what these songs are and he thinks the fans made the chant up?
So I actually think it's A, but I'll give you my reason why. It has something to do with the fact that he likes wrestling.
Okay.
Now, the reason why I feel wrestling is the tie-in is wrestling pulls from sort of pop culture quite frequently. And it sounds like he has been following like WWE for some time.
Yeah.
That I believe he will have heard this before.
Okay.
Now, I can't tell you necessarily which version, right, but I actually think, and that's where I feel it's how wrestling pulls on pop culture.
Yeah.
And if only that's the influence enough.
I like that. So you're not saying there's a particular wrestler or use it as this entrance. You're just saying there's enough pop culture knowledge. I think, you know, that's a really good take. You're the first person who's tied in the wrestling, because he did that Kevin Owens reference earlier in the week.
Yeah, the KO. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it to you. And, you know, not a massive popular Twitter poll, but I got a couple hundred votes. And right now it's 53% to 47% saying no, he does not know the songs, but it's close.
And if this whole interview and him liking WWE didn't happen, I would have said no.
Right.
I would have been like, nah, I just don't necessarily like
that. Is critical thinking, my man. That is, I missed that about you. That was very good. Very good.
One final thing, and this actually ties into a tweet, a callback of yours, that the Canucks were winning games and you were saving money. Is there really a chance the Canucks make the playoffs? I know there is a chance,
yes,
but is there really, like, you're, you know, in the good looking positive Canucks fan club
of course.
And
so here's the thing, Chris, they have 26 points in 29 games. If they got to get to 94 points, that means they need 68 points in their final 53 games. I got that. Give them four overtime or shootout losses. That means I have them going 32-17-4. 32-17-4 over their final 53. That makes sense. 32-17. That's 15.
Essentially,
yeah.
Two out of every three.
Exactly. That means they're 15 games under 500. They got to get to 15 games over 500. And that makes perfect sense because they're three games under right now. And you got to finish 12 games over to get to 94. So, would I? 4 games ago, they need to go 36-17-4. And I'd say, no way, that's impossible. Now they are 32-17-4. Guess what? If they go 6-3, tall task, but if they go 6-3 for their final games of December, they have clawed their way back to 500, and they can concentrate on going 3 games over 500 for each of the remaining 4 months, which is not easy. But when you do it in digestible chunks like that, it's possible. Having said all of that, despite founding the GLCPC, I still think it's a tall order, because not only you're playing against teams that want to win just as badly as you do. So as much as this pains me to say, if I had to mortgage my house or lay down some money, I would bet against them making the playoffs, yeah, but they're going to make it darn interesting. How about you, my friend?
I think that's fair, because I look at it this way. If the Vancouver Canucks in the past 4 games had played the best in the league and got those 4 wins, I might be a little more aggressively behind. So you're saying they've got a chance.
Yeah.
But I still have questions, because, you know, good teams beat all teams.
Yeah.
And that's where we've not yet seen the Vancouver Canucks define themselves as a good team.
Although
they've even struggled to beat the teams they should have beat.
You're right. Chris, I didn't mean to interrupt. Carolina is a top 5 team, though. Boston in fighting for a playoff spot. Winnipeg up there in LA. So, granted, every team is better than the Canucks right now.
Yeah. I mean,
but they have, you know, Columbus, they're pretty good, but San Jose faltering a bit. Arizona, San Jose again. There's a Toronto one in there. Seattle, Anaheim's good.
Well, I think they should beat Seattle. I mean, Toronto, it's going to be a hard game.
Yeah.
I don't get the way the Canucks schedule works, where they play at home, go to San Jose, come back, play at home, go down to San Jose, come back home. Like,
yeah.
Why are there 2 road trips down to California? Is it just to warm them up before the holidays? Like,
throw them a bone a bit.
Yeah, maybe. Anywho, we'll take ourselves here a short break and listen to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
This segment was the Clay segment. When Matt introduced half full, half empty, the context was is that you had always half full, positive Clay.
Of course.
And then you had half empty, Chris and or Matt and Adam.
It was more than half, Chris. It might as well be half full, really empty.
Yeah, maybe. But I figured what better place to get to know what Clay has been up to. I mean, I'm going to have to presume all of our listeners know. But what is it that you've been up to? Because, you know, for those who are newer to the show, Clay and I started this podcast way back when. And then eventually you'd sort of, you know, transitioned away. You became this YouTube celebrity personality. And now, I mean, you're a podcaster, a YouTube celebrity. You're going to be on, Finding Big Jumbo or whatever it is. Good thing.
Sorry, that was funny, Matt.
Well, I saw the tweet with you and Kat.
Yeah.
And so for those who don't know, the woman behind Finding a Big Country, she's doing something, plays in it, and immediately I'm like, man, there's a missed opportunity considering no one's been called Jumbo here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Anyhow, sorry. What have you been up to?
Thank you. From a Canucks content creation standpoint, yes, I've been focusing mostly on my YouTube channel and a lot of live streams, 2 or 3 times a week, pre-game previews, post-game analysis, still a parody song here and there, but really just trying to build a genuine community. The subscribers are nice. The members, the paid members are nice. The comments on the videos are nice, but I'm really enjoying building that community. And part of the memberships, Chris, that I'm doing is obviously a way to support a bit what I'm doing, but it's a chance. A couple of the tiers, I'm having one-on-one Zoom chats with people, and it's almost like ministry, which is what I do for my full-time job. It's getting to know people for half an hour, getting to know their struggles, their joys, and what they're interested in. And that's been the most redeeming part to me. And that has nothing to do with how many number of subs I have. That's just getting to know people and getting to know their stories. Having said that, I do have a couple of neat things and I can talk about them because I think when you release this, at least one of them will be. So Marie Huey, a good friend of yours as well, and my favorite collaborator when it comes to music, we are going to be on Cameo for the next week. And we are, yes, people can actually, we're not celebrities. We're wannabe celebrities in our own mind, but people can pay $50 US and we will send them a 45-second personalized Christmas song. And then all that proceeds go to the Canucks for Kids Fund, which is a wonderful, wonderful cause. So that's something new. Something that you know about me is I like to try creative things. I like to try new things. And sometimes they fail. Sometimes they succeed. But I'm going to try. I want to express my fandom in a creative way. The one with Kat, I'm not allowed to say what it's about.
Oh, no, I'm not trying to. No. I can tease it.
I'm not allowed to say what it's about and where it's going to be shown, but I can say it's about a very famous or infamous moment in time in Canucks history. What do you guys think? And
had a few.
Yeah. And it's going to be on a network bigger than any of her other shows have done. And it's a network that maybe produces these documentaries quite regularly on a high profile. So we won't say it, but I think you probably know what I'm talking. It's pretty cool that she has this opportunity. Yes, she did Finding Big Country, interviewing Bryant Reeves in Oklahoma. And now
I love Finding Big Country.
And no, it's not about finding Jim Benning or anything like that, but it's another documentary that she's going to put her wonderful creative stamp on. So a couple of kind of neat things on the side, but most importantly, continue to engage the Canucks community while trying to be a good dad and a good husband alongside.
The thing I wanted to sort of point out is, at what point do you just transform your space in your house to look exactly like your car so that when you record yourself in your car, it could be in your car or in your quote unquote car.
That's true. I could easily bring in one of the seats, although I'm not sure how I would drive it, and, you know, put a window in the back and do a green screen of the guy's house that I always film in front of. Yep. I think we're onto something. Yeah.
I mean, Wireless Wave, not that they sponsor this podcast, because they don't. And if they do, I wouldn't get anything from it because it goes to the network. They had those, like, I can't remember what model car in all their stores, but they had one in every one of their store back in the day. This could just be you doing the reverse of that. Instead of it being the front of the car, you just have half the car in your space there.
Hey, I think you're onto something. You're always thinking.
Yeah, but it's got to the point now where even people who don't necessarily know who you are, they know you as the either one of Canucks thumbs up guy,
yeah,
or the guy who records videos in his car about the Canucks.
I love it. And I think it was the pandemic thing, Chris, and it was the absence makes the heart grow fonder. I don't do it for this, but now when I go to games, it sounds like I'm showing off, but I'm just telling you the truth. I get stopped about 10 or 12 times a game now. You know, hey, Clay, or, you know, I love your stuff, or, you know, I'll get a lot of the thumbs up without them even saying anything, which is a little bit creepy now that I think about it. But overall, it's nice. The recognition is nice, but if I can stop and have a genuine 1 or 2 minute conversation with that person, that's more important to me than a recognition. But yes, the thumbs up meme that went kind of viral back in April, that was a nice little added touch too. I haven't been able to use it a lot though this year until the last week or so.
Oh, so I'd like to know what it's like if you were using it a lot, because you use it a lot.
Well said, well played, touche, all those words, you got me there. Yeah, just wait till they're bound for the playoffs, man. You're gonna come over to my house and probably pile drive me in my backyard.
I'm probably one of the few people out there that actually knows where you live, so it is possible.
Exactly. Don't announce that to your thousands of listeners.
Yeah, no kidding. But no, it's pretty cool. And I've talked actually about it on the show. Mm. You recently did a 24-hour live stream,
yeah,
which I thought was pretty cool. I tuned in for a little bit. It was getting weird. when I was there, there was like, I think one of your daughter's dolls or something at one point. And then you got up. I think I can't remember if it was like what exactly it was, but all that I took a screen cap of was your stream, an empty chair and a doll.
Yeah. I think I did. I was trying to look at something in the closet, or I went to the restroom, cause you got to do that over the 24 hours. And yeah, thank you, Chris. That one was, it was just something different. Talk about trying to do different things on my channel. I wanted to celebrate the start of a new Canucks season. That was the very first weekend. Mm-hmm. The Canucks had two games back to back. And most importantly, I wanted to continue to build community. And that was fun. We had a nice mix of media, friends, family members, music. And I'm not sure if I'll do it again, or if I do it again, I won't do it for another year or so. But would you join me?
Oh, yeah, I'd totally be there to
Can I give you like the 3M slot?
Well, I'm not Chris Faber. Wrong Chris. Faber, he's young. Like, I was actually talking about this with Anna, is I'm surprised that you at our age,
yep.
were able to go 24 hours. Cause like,
well, it did help. It did help that I had guests on almost every hour. So that helped a lot. That in theory cuts my talking in half. Right. But there were a couple times where I was fading. I won't say who I was talking to, but it's not because of them, but I was fading. And certainly during the last 2 hours when I had the game on, I caught myself dozing, but after 22 and a half hours, I think I'm allowed a quick 5 second nap.
Yeah, no, totally. It's and you know, it's happened to like streamers all the time.
Yeah.
It's just eventually you'll go on to like a Reddit and live stream fails and there's Clay snoring into his microphone or
having a doll on screen for 30 seconds with no action.
Exactly. But no, I mean, it's pretty cool. And I like how you're really looking at exploring different things to engage the community. I know you had like the sort of meetup live event.
Yeah.
And then you actually streamed from there, which was pretty cool. I mean, with our show, we were starting to explore that. And then the pandemic hit.
Yes.
Like we actually had like a live event where we recorded a show, watched a game. We had another sort of like
a neat
podcast style tweet up and then pandemic.
Yes.
But it's, I know it's something that we want to do, like Anna and I have talked about, but not to the level of watching Anna and I for 24 hours. Because,
but you know,
maybe she can do it. I could.
But you and I together, we were cutting edge back in the day when we would record our vlogs video version from the Hog Shack in Steveston.
Yeah. I know. CHBTV. I actually, you'll see me throw back to a holiday version of CHBTV because I do this each and every holiday season.
You can do it this year too? You got it. You got it.
Well, I'm just going to throw back to the original one. I don't have the wherewithal to make something like that. Right. And I got to give credit to Ed, who did a lot of
production
for us. Ed Lau. Yeah.
Very good.
But no, those were good times. Back to the Canucks though.
Oh yeah. So you can't walk down memory lane for the next half an hour. No, we're not going
to
do that.
Well, I mean, I totally love to, but I don't know if entirely our listeners, especially, you know, it's like, why are these two old men just chattering on?
Exactly.
Last weekend, and I talked a little bit about the Benning era and the Green era, and I thought, you know what? Why not ask someone like Clay? Because your perspective is one of positivity. Mm-hmm. Even when you're critical, you're still positive about it.
Yep.
And I'm genuinely curious because you and I started up this show just before the Benning era came to be.
Yes.
And here we are coming together at the end of it. So what are your thoughts on what the Benning era would be?
The Benning era,
remembered as.
Thank you, Chris, for asking. The Benning era, I will say, was a failure, and that's strong words coming from me, but it's true. When you look at the sheer math of two playoff appearances, that's not good. I would say that his drafting was pretty good. Hughes, Pettersson, Demko, Höglander, Podkolzin, Besser. You know, some misses with Yolevi and Virtanen. But I'd say his drafting was actually his strongest part. And that's probably not surprising given A, how high the Canucks drafted, and B, his history as a scout. But then it's the other parts, Chris, there where you kind of give him almost barely passing grades. Trades, some good ones, some bad ones. UFA signings, pretty bad ones. You think of Myers and Erickson. Re-signing RFAs, that's pretty good, actually. So maybe RFAs and UFAs kind of balance each other out. And then I'd say his trades were just okay. So overall, he's just okay, but you can't be just okay. So I would say that Benning's tenure was not strong. And I think it's a lot of had to do with the messaging too. We've talked, Chris, many times. We've alluded to the importance of good communication, strong, clear communication. Benning was never able to communicate a proper vision, or he would be seen to be changing, right? Moving the goalposts, as we say, every time he opened his mouth. When it comes to Green, I thought he did well for a while with the roster that he had, but he seemed reticent to evolve and to change and to see where things were going wrong until it was too late. So I give Green a tiny bit more of a pass than Benning. Yeah, that's where I'm at with those two guys.
Sure. Now, there are some who would suggest that the Benning era was set back in time by the efforts of Mike Gillis. There are a few that actually throw it all the way back to the Brian Burke era, which is some next level.
So no Harry Neal or Pat Quinn, though? They don't go back that far?
Well, I mean, if you go way, way back. I mean, I don't know where the line is drawn, but it's difficult. And so the reason I ask this is that I look at the Gillis era as a completely different era. Like, Gillis was informed, we want to win. We want to win now. Yeah. And what did he do? He put together a team that was designed to do that.
Yeah.
And when it didn't, he himself had said, no, we need to reset. We need to make some tough decisions. And then ownership made a tough decision, or Trevor made a tough decision, whomever you think actually happened to be the one to make the decision. Yeah. But Gillis was no longer there. And so this common argument is like, oh, Gillis left the cupboards bare and Benning had to go and fill them. And you pointed out that he started doing that.
Yeah.
But I feel that while that might be true, it's one thing to put stuff into the cupboards. It's another thing to use what's in the cupboards before it expires.
Yes, yes. You're right on there. I would agree with that argument that Benning was hamstrung by Gillis if we were talking about 1 or 2 years after Gillis left, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you need 2 or 3 years to redraft and build and everything. But you're exactly right about cupboards and expiry dates, because it was 7 to 7.5 years or 8 years, whatever the total was. And sure, you could say after 2014, after Gillis got fired and Lindon came in and Benning came in, you had Sedins that were still pretty good. You know, Kessler and Burrows, those guys still okay, but starting to, Luongo got traded, all these things. So you could almost excuse them if they had a couple of rough years. And then you could say, okay, maybe after the Sedin's retired, you're still trying to figure that out. But over the span of 8 years, they didn't move at all. You could argue they got worse. And that's, I think, the biggest indictment of Benning's tenure is he had 7 or 8 years to rebuild. And I don't think he did. Well, he did. Well, I think, you know what it is, Chris? I think Pettersson and Hughes artificially sped up the rebuild two seasons ago when they were so good. Yeah. So I think that's a tricky part too.
And Anna and I have talked about it. If the pandemic does not happen, there's a fair chance the Canucks don't make the playoffs.
Yep.
They don't make the postseason. They're not as good as what they did. I genuinely wonder if the bubble had Jim and that leadership core think, oh, hey, man, we're ahead of schedule. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And then reality hits. Oh, we're actually not ahead of schedule. We need 2 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a very astute observation. I agree with you. The bubble artificially inflated how we viewed our team.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to point out that even on this show, which Anna and I still will probably refer to it as the C4 Canucks playoffs podcast because it was all or nothing this season.
Mm.
The fact that it was all or nothing this season, I feel might have set the team back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's just like, I'm not going to knock the fact that we've got a good young core, but by the time that you're able to put this good young core to use, you'll have some older players who no longer really fit within the core.
Yes.
So whether it's Jim Rutherford or the next GM, some tough decisions need to be made. They need to shore up a blue line. I can't see a future that includes a Garland, a Besser, a Horvat. Like, I think one of those three, if not two or three, are gone. And that's not because I'm trying to say I want to run them out of town.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to consider, what assets do you have available to you that you can leverage to either get contracts off your books or contract-friendly players who are actually decent in their role on it?
You said Besser, Horvat, and Garland. Did you mean Besser, Horvat, and Miller, or did you mean Garland?
I actually mean – so Miller's another name. Yep. Miller, I feel, would be actually – I sort of put on – I think Miller's gone.
You're right.
And it's not – I just feel that he gets traded. But then the Besser, Horvat, Garland is sort of your
next tier
group of – yeah.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, there's – like, there are fewer untouchables, but I just feel just because they're untouchable doesn't necessarily mean you have something you can that like Jim's like, oh no, we try to, you know, we've been getting phone calls. Like, they've been calling us. Yeah. Because it's the way the league works. It's they're sharks. There's blood in the water and they're like, it's frenzy time.
I want to give you props, Chris, because 7 years ago, you taught me something that I never even thought of. We were talking about, you might remember this. We were talking about Yannick Hansen, and you were saying we should trade him now. And I said, why would you trade Yannick Hansen now? He's like our Connor Garland now, where he's so important, right? Huh. And you told me, Clay, you have to think about where is Yannick Hansen going to be around when the Canucks are going to compete for the Stanley Cup? And I actually said, I don't know. And he goes, that's why you trade him now, because you got to get assets that are going to be around when we actually compete, not on these expiring contracts. And then you're the first guy who taught me that. And I kind of use that lens now. I don't know, you remember having that conversation way back in the day. But the other thing is to follow up on this young core, Jim Benning's performance. If you didn't know anything about the makeup of the roster and the salary cap, and you saw a team that had Demko, Besser, Horvat, Pettersson, Hughes, those five key points, right? And then I think the problem with Benning is he never built around that core properly. Erickson, Beagle, Roussel, Sam Gagner, remember that? You know, Delzato, Pouliot. He never brought in guys that were that next level, that kind of insulate the young guys, but were really good. Even Ekman-Larsson, I love that trade for Ekman-Larsson-Garland, but you give up Ekman-Larsson-Garland, but you gave up three draft picks as part of that to do that.
Yeah.
So,
The thing about on the Ole Ellon, I mean, Anna spoke about Ole Ellon on paper for a season or two is good. Yeah. It's the future that you mortgaged and the fact that his contract goes well into that same future, right? Like, it's a tough thing, but hey, if it works out now, like, I, to be honest, and I'm going to say this now, I said it before, if Jim Benning had got a cup this season, I don't care what he does. I just want, that's all I want. I don't care, right? Like, next season could be the, it could be the dark days again. The Canucks have a cup. It's a difficult thing to understand as to sort of how he viewed what was needed, but you said it very well. He had a core that he had difficulty either insulating or building around. Mm-hmm. For every Tanner Pearson on his first contract, not the one he got again, or a Tyler Toffoli who like I still can't get over the fact that Montreal got Toffoli for numbers that I would have said, if you can get Toffoli for that, you sign it yesterday.
Yes.
Right. Like there's things that are just, why, what was the struggle here? Or in Jim's words, I ran out of time. Like you can't be running out of time, bud.
Yeah. Yep. You're right on. And I think, it'll be, his tenure will be signaled as a tenure of lost opportunity.
Now I'm going to ask you an interesting question.
I'm ready.
What is the darkest era of Vancouver Canucks hockey?
I have a couple, and I think I know why you're asking this, but I'll answer first and then I'll let you. I think the Messier era was tough because we had a stacked team with Messier.
Well, that 97 team.
Didn't that Beery, McGillney, Messier, Naslund, and
Linden? Or sorry, not 97. I think it was the 95 team, if I'm thinking correctly. Was it 95? It was, it was like Beery, McGillney, Messier, Naslund, Linden. Yeah. Like the roster was like, this is gonna win the cup.
So that part, that part stings. I think back to the times where like Rick Lee and Bill LaForge were trying to coach, and our teams were stinky that way. But that was when I was younger and more in my teens. I think because I was 23 years old in 1997, and I can remember vividly signing Messier and you know the pictures of him with his arms raised. We're gonna do this here. To me, that was a very dark time. Why do you ask, Chris?
Well, so that I've always said it's the dark era. Yeah. It's the we refer to a coach of the time as the coach that shall not be named, right? Like, you know, if you wear a Messier jersey in town, it generates a conversation that is vitriolic in nature, right? Like this is that period of time is the darkest timeline.
Yes.
Yet it was more successful than the one we just got out of. Mm-hmm. And I feel that if we were being honest, the darkest era was probably the Benning era. But if there is one thing that was different, the Benning era produced the core we have today. Yeah. The darkest timeline produced nothing more than chaos. Caleb said.
Is that guy real, by the way?
I don't know. There are some that think it's an act. There's others that think he's real. I genuinely don't know. Okay. There are times when I'm wondering if this is someone like, is this Andy Kaufman as a Canucks fan? I mean, you and I get the reference. Maybe some of our listeners don't, but if this is
an act, wearing a neck brace, like,
yeah, maybe it's a really good one. Right. Yeah. But Caleb had commented about, is there maybe that Jim Rutherford brings Jim Benning back? And people are like, no, man, it's not going to happen. And I was like, well, in Canucks history, there is a call here because the Vancouver Canucks during the McCaw era fired Quinn as GM. Yeah. This is the one where they Stan McCammon, who was like the lawyer for McCaw, flew to Washington, fires Pat. And then a week or so later, they get Pat on the phone. They're like, yeah, so would you come back on an interim basis to sort of help manage a team and maybe coach? And Pat said no. I don't think he said just no. I think there was more Irish vernacular thrown in. But it has happened before, so let's not say this happened. But no, I think back to that era. It's always the dark time, and I think it will be because they didn't have the core. Right. But what did Brian Burke do? Pulled off the trade.
Yes, yes.
Or the trades at the draft.
And just to close this loop, I think you're referencing this too because we've seen a lot of debate over the past week of whether or not this was the darkest era, the Benning era, this, you know, but I think a lot of people who don't have the wisdom experience, not just of us, but who've been fans for longer than the past 5 or 10 years, they remember some pretty tough times.
Yeah. Well, and that's like going back before our time. I mean, the Canucks were an expansion team for a long time.
Yeah.
And that 82 run was probably more like the 94 run, a blue collar team that just didn't know how to lose.
Yep.
Not necessarily a team that knew how to win.
Yeah. Yep.
And in 82, they ran up against, unfortunately, the Islanders, who were a juggernaut. Yeah. And then in 94.
At least we won a game. Well, we won three games in 94.
Yeah. I mean, heck, 94, a Lafayette to post another direction.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What's not to say that the parade was won with a cup, yeah. Not a parade where, you know, sorry, I dropped the lid on the Campbell Trophy.
You try to make me sad, man. You better pick me up before we wind up here.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I'm sorry, but here, you know, let's actually pick you up. So, Clay, I don't know if you have something similar, but we have a C4 text line.
Oh, cool.
And our listeners can actually call in, leave a voicemail, or they can send us a text message.
That's awesome.
That number is 604-200-6201. That's 604-200-6201. And we got a text message from a friend of the show, Lisa Martin.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to read it because our process is if you text us, we will read it verbatim. If you leave a voicemail, we will include it on a show. And Lisa goes and says, "Hi, Chris and Anna. Happy holiday season from Lisa Martin, living in Krakenland. I hope you both have a fantastic holiday. Here's to a better season." And I mean, Lisa, she's been a longtime listener. She listens to a lot of Canucks podcasts. I wanted to share that. I mean, she is always so positive. She reminds me with her positivity of you.
Well, I think it's great, A, that Lisa took the time to wrote in. So thank you, Lisa. B, I think it's great that you take the time. You make this opportunity available for someone to simply send a quick hello, message, question, affirmation, encouragement, challenge. And I think it's great that you're building out community. So keep it up. That's a really good idea. So if I phone that number, I don't get you or Anna then?
Okay. No, you get a voicemail. Okay. Yeah. And then whatever you say gets played on an upcoming episode.
Okay, I might do that later, actually.
Okay. We did get a voicemail, however, and let me play it.
We won a game on Wednesday. Then we won again on Friday. That's called two in a row. If we win again tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. But I call it BS. I don't know why they're suddenly winning. Now I can't watch any of the games. I don't know if it's because they needed Bruce Boudreau to yell the F word a bunch of times. Because if that was the case, I could have turned up and helped JT Miller out and dropped a couple of F-bombs for them. But they say change is as good as arrest, and maybe that's what it took. I doubt it's the news that Jim Rutherford has been announced president of hockey. It's better than nothing because literally we had no one in that role before, but you do hope that it's not really a long-term placement and he doesn't have too much effect on the general outlook because he's, let's face it, a bit of a dinosaur. Yeah, that's all I have. I'm a bit perplexed by everything. I suppose it's shootout results, so we can't put too much weight on it. We'll see what happens when we start playing some legit teams. But yeah, pretty peeved at the moment that Canucks are suddenly remembering how to win. We'll see that what happens. Okay, enjoy the episode.
That voice sounded familiar.
So wait a sec, Chris. If that's who I think it is, she couldn't even let me have my one chance to co-host with you, uninterrupted, uninhibited.
I know you're gonna have to. You should send her a sternly worded letter or email. I mean, might be quicker.
Actually, it was great to hear Anna's voice. And truth be told, we like to it's one way, as you know, she likes to poke fun of me a lot on social media. But to her credit, she did come out and support me at the pub night. I know that secretly she does support me and encourage me. So Anna, Merry Christmas. It's wonderful to hear your voice. But let's talk about what she said.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Anna raises a very, very salient point. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show. Like the Vancouver Canucks right now are on a run. I love the call to Major League. Cause I mean, anyone who knows this show, we are big fans of Major League, Mr. Baseball, like all these old sports movies. Right. Like if there's a way to involve them in the show, we can. Completely off the rails. Karate Kid season 4 drops December 31st.
All right. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. But, no, I think, you know, she's right. Like, I don't know what to make of the Vancouver Canucks right now. Mm. And we talked about it. It's like, you know, is this sustainable? I don't know. But boy, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy the ride right now.
You just nailed it, because I was going to say that. I think because of not our responsibility, because you are a content creator, because I'm a content creator, people, I don't know how else to say that, are going to expect more than for us simply to say, just sit back and enjoy the ride. Whatever happens, happens. But honestly, Chris, that's how I feel right now. And you can get in analytics or how many games do they have to win to make the playoffs. I kind of just want to see where this goes and see what Jim Rutherford does, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like, you know, the question that Bruce got. So what do you say after four wins? He's like, let's go for five. And I'm like, why not? Like, I enjoy watching Canucks hockey again. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. I think the last time I could say I really enjoyed hockey was the bubble that sort of all of a sudden drew me in. And when Thatcher Demko comes in for an alien Markstrom, and I'm like, oh no, the one person that made this possible. And then Demko becomes a verb.
Yes.
Like, you know, you've made it for the right reasons when you're the verb.
Yeah. I guess it would make for kind of, well, I don't know. Sometimes I want to just be more of a fan and react as a fan. And I don't know if you get this actually. I'll make this quick, I promise. But I think some people, they label me as media only because of the platform I have. But I always walk them back and say, no, I'm not media, although I respect and have a lot of what the media does and the people in there. But I want to be known as a fan. That way I'm kind of uninhibited. I can say what I want and how I want to, as opposed to any journalistic expectation, right? Or regulations or whatever the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say you're closer to media than I am, but you know, you raise a very salient point as well as sort of the history of this podcast. You and I got together because we were two guys that just liked creating content, like the sound of our own voice, and thought, let's just have a conversation like two fans would about the team we enjoyed. And I don't think we've really ever taken ourselves more seriously than just that. Like, yeah. I remember when we were planning this out, we were looking at the podcasts on the scene at the time, yep. And there were some that were very serious. Mm-hmm. There were others that were not at all serious, like the, you know, Legion of Blogcast, Trust the Process, as it might have sort of evolved into. But that's perfectly fine. And we wanted to find the middle ground as, like, you know, two semi-intelligent guys.
Good-looking guys.
Talking
podcast. Yeah, of course.
Well, you can say that about yourself. Me, not so much. But no, I think that's what's most important. Yeah. Be a fan first, enjoy it for what it is. And hey, you know what? Like, I think someone asked me, well, are you going to be upset if the Canucks don't make the playoffs? Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd sort of come to the belief that this season was almost written off, right? Like, it had gotten dark and I'm like, oh man. And then I was like, what's the future going to look like? I don't know. Well, I'm not going to lie. I was for regime change. Yeah. I have not been a Jim Benning guy ever.
Yep.
Like, even when Jim got hired, I was a Gilman guy. Mm-hmm. And then when Gilman got let go, I was like, ah, bad decision.
Yep.
So, you know, I've sort of got what I want. Now, if the Canucks need to rebuild, I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to, but if they have to.
Oh, well. I hear you.
Anywho, it's been a longer show than I actually thought we'd talk, but it's been a while since you and I have gotten together. And if I recall correctly, we were able to spin a yarn back in the day too.
Absolutely. So. And I didn't ask you for permission, but there's one thing that you and I helped create in my personal calling card at the end of our episodes. Do you know what I'm talking about, Chris?
Power of the 5-7-5.
Do you mind if I drop one as my sign off here and then I'll let you do your wrap up? Totally. Awesome. We had Haiku Corner back in the day, and it was something that we created. My love for Japanese poetry, the 17 syllables. So I have one for you, Chris, in appreciation and for all your listeners. Here we go. Thanks for having me. Did not even skip a beat. It's C4 for life.
Oh, that's good. The true power of the 5-7. I miss the power of the 5-7-5. I would bring it back if I thought it would work without
you. Well, but it I'll wouldn't. Take that as a compliment. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's good to have you back. I know we've talked about this, you know, on previous shows are like, oh, we should get you back more regularly. I think we should. Like, I really enjoy our time, our ability to just, you know, talk about things despite you being a Richmond Colt and me being a Steeston Packer.
That's true.
Right? Although your high school still exists, mine not so much. So I guess you win.
Oh, no, you've amalgamated to a superpower now.
That's right. That's what happens, I guess. You know, you live long enough that you evolve.
There you go.
But no, I mean, it's been good to have you on, and hopefully we can figure out a way to get you back in more frequently. I mean, I know, again, you're a YouTube celebrity, media superstar, and your calendar's pretty full, but I'll talk to your people and see if they answer the phone when I call.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, and yes, I will always pick up the phone when you call or text or tweet or whatever the cool kids do these days. And I, in all seriousness, without getting all sentimental, I hold you and Anna and the team in high regard. I love what you guys are doing. And I never forget where I started too. And it's not like I've progressed much since then, but I do appreciate it. And
hey, I bet you it's youtube.com/CanuckClay.
It is, yes.
See, we don't have that for C4. Mine is youtube.com/blah, blah, 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 blah.
Thank you, brother. So, but anytime you've made filling in or adding or whatever you need me to do, I'm always here for you, brother. And thank you to all the listeners for supporting back in the day and all the way up until now. Keep on supporting Chris and Anna. They are doing some really good work.
Awesome. Awesome. So we are going to wrap the show up. As we talked about earlier, the C4 text line always open, 604-200-6201. You can also drop into the conversation in C4 Discord. That's discord.io/C4podcast. And obviously we're on social media at the C4 podcast on Twitter and facebook.com/C4podcast. I will be back again next week with another special guest or two or three or four. I don't know. I mean, Squadcast, which is what we use, gives us the power to have four people connected. So we'll see what I can wrangle up. Anna is still going to be away, but knowing her, she'll probably find a way to get her 2 cents in. But on behalf of myself, Chris at Lightforce, Clay at Canuck Clay on Twitter or youtube.com/CanuckClay. Check out his channel if you haven't done so already. I'm going to sign off the Chris and Clay's Canucks commentary brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com with We Out.